Good afternoon and welcome. Today is still Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. We are at the 1 o'clock general discussion in the Board of County Commissioners conference room. And for us on the agenda today is Josephine County Foundation and Hidden Valley High School presentation. We have present Commissioners DeYoung and Morgan, and Commissioner Hare will not be joining us for this meeting. So with that, I'll have you guys introduce yourselves for the sake of our record, and then we'll let you go from there.
I'm Chris Pendleton. I'm a teacher at Hidden Valley High School, a member or advisor of the Hidden Valley FBLA, or at least I was, and moving on to that. I'm also the executive director of the Josephine County Foundation, board member, and founder.
My name is Aria Back. I go to Hidden Valley High School, and I'm a student officer of the Josephine County Foundation. My official title is co-treasurer and volunteer coordinator.
And I'm Joan Jones. I'm one of the founding board members. I live in San Diego, but come up here 5 or 6 times a year to work with Josephine County Foundation.
Wonderful.
I'm Frank Alt. I'm the board chairman and founder, and I split my time between Southern Oregon and San Diego. And we're really pleased to have the opportunity to kind of brief you a little bit of what Josephine County Foundation is all about, and I'll turn it over to her.
Yeah, and I am Allison Murray, and I am the program manager for the Josephine County Foundation.
Okay, and are you new in that role?
Huh?
Are you new in that role?
I am, yeah.
Okay. Welcome. I'm going to just move this over here so we can make sure we can hear everybody better.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I have an extra one if the recorder needs one.
I'll give her mine.
Yeah. Right.
I have it already.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's get one for Simon because he'll probably.
Oh, that'll work.
Yeah. We had met with Simon previously a couple of years ago.
But he probably doesn't have a brochure.
No, the brochure did not exist then. But basically, we formed Josephine County Foundation in 2011 when the students became cognizant that statistically Josephine County was not performing very well. Very low high school graduation rates, high levels of poverty, et cetera. So the kids really kind of said, what can we do to make a difference? And so we said, well, we got an idea. So we talked about it, and we formed the Josephine County Foundation as an opportunity for two things. First, for the students to become aware of what is community service all about? What are nonprofits about? But more than that, they actually got to run a business. The officers of the Josephine County Foundation are all students. We have several board officers, but we do have all of the officers, the president, executive VP, treasurer, secretary, are all students. And they're learning how to run a business. We had a board meeting last night. They sign all the documents we do. They approve everything like a normal corporation. They also learn how to speak in public. They also learn grant writing because as they do community service projects, they need to have funds. And so they do grant writing classes. They do fundraising in the community. They also have the opportunity to interface with business leaders, politicians, such as Aria today, meeting with the two of you. They also have had a side benefit that I guess we really hadn't thought about initially. And that is they're getting their eyes open to different career opportunities. We've done now 5 free vision clinics over the years. And I just talked to one of the students today who's in his second year at Oregon State. And he wants to be an optometrist. And it's because of working and doing the vision clinics, seeing the benefit to the people attending and getting glasses, but also getting the confidence that he can do it. Because at the vision clinics, the students actually dilate eyes and do all the various testings except for one position where the optometrist determines the actual prescription needs and looks for any particular diseases. But as we put the direction of JCF together, we really said there's kind of 2 focus areas. Well, maybe 3, but one is very specifically to improve graduation rates. Another is to provide health care where it's lacking to the community so everybody would have access. And just lastly, to make the community more vibrant.
How do you provide health care?
Well, what we've done is we've had now 5 free vision clinics. We go to social agencies to determine people who cannot afford to have vision care, because that's not one of those that's always covered by various state plans. So we have, all five of them have averaged about 150 individuals who come to there. They get free eye exams. They get free glasses. Prescriptions are determined. We do fundraising. It normally costs $4,000 average, to put on a vision clinic. But they walk away with a pair of glasses. And I think that was the first one we did. And one of the things that just really got to the students was that when it was done, there was a woman who had come in with her mother and her own daughter. And the grandmother was the one getting the glasses. And afterwards, the grandmother was crying. And one of the students went up to her and said, "Well, why are you crying? What's wrong?" "Oh, she's so beautiful." She said it was the first time she'd seen her granddaughter clearly. And even at this last one that we just did in January, somebody was able to come in and get glasses. Because they could see, they got their driver's license. Because they got their driver's license, they ended up getting a job.
Right.
So, you know, the kids started to see how these things really impact the community. We've also had a healthy care fair up at Wolf Creek School. We had dentists come in. We had three dental chairs, and they were doing fillings, extractions, anything that was needed. And they also had dental hygienists that were doing cleaning of the teeth. So again, what we're really concentrating on are the services that are not typically available. So that's what we're doing in that area. When we look at the low graduation rates, and the three rural schools in the Three Rivers District have a lower graduation rate than Grants Pass, but both of us are lower than the state average, and the state's second worst in the nation. So why do kids
not very good?
Well, we spend money in it.
He just kept talking, and it kept getting worse. Go ahead.
Yeah. We could have started it the other way and said,
"No, I'm not sugarcoating it."
But
keep it up.
The bottom line is, why do students drop out? And some of it are cultural things at home. They just don't value education. But there's many other things. So what we've done is we have now, going into our fourth year, of doing a student enrichment program, where we provide the classroom teachers grants up to $1,000, and we've done 60 of these now, totaling about $47,000. They come in with a request to do something that would be an enrichment idea for students. It could be a project in the classroom. It could be a field trip, equipment that they need for the classroom.
And this could be any teacher K through 12. That's eligible for this program.
Yeah, any teacher in Josephine County. What we then do is we take one student from each of the four public high schools, and they form a committee that does the review, because our belief is, who knows better what students need than students themselves? So these grants are really to try to get people involved, because one of the things statistically is shown is, if students are involved in activities in their school, they're more likely to stay in school because they want to continue that activity, whether it's the band or a sports, cheerleading, a club, whatever it might be. So we have provided funding for judo clubs and things such as that, a kiln for a ceramics class at Grants Pass High School. So different things, but they're all done all the way down to the elementary school level. One of the things that we found, kids, homeless kids and others that were unable to really have good clothing. They don't like coming to school with dirty clothes, with holes in their clothing. So we established campus closets at the three rural high schools where students can come in and get clothing. Originally, they had some that were just boxes full of stuff kids would sort through. That wasn't very appealing. So they have built many boutiques at the schools. Everything's on racks. Shoes are on walls. Everything is very neatly displayed. They do have prom dresses there because if kids are involved in school and go to the prom. But a lot of kids, once they've gone, they don't need their dress anymore. They turn it in. They have school supplies. Lots of places provide school supplies when kids start school. But what happens in January, February? They run out of notebooks or this or that. We have school supplies in there. We have toiletries, some basic things that kids might need in school. So we've done that. One of the other reasons they drop out, they get bullied. You know, kids pick on them. They don't feel comfortable. We work with Grants Pass School District and for their 6 elementary schools put in buddy benches last year at those schools so kids that are uncomfortable or not have friends could be there and somebody would join them. We actually had sessions at all the schools to talk about it so they would know, hey, if somebody's sitting there, go join them. And we're actually got a very ambitious program going this year. And it is a 100-mile run. It's going to start right here.
Yeah, we'll let him do it.
Well, I will say up front, you two will be involved.
Yeah, but not the run. Yeah. We'll let the other commissioner take that lead. Yeah, be happy to hold the finish line.
Start and finish will be here. And we will have 6 schools involved. So the 4 public schools here, as well as New Hope, that's been very active in JCF, and also Rogue River, even though they're across the border in Jackson.
They're ours. Yeah. Oh, I mean.
Yeah. They feel more connection here than they do
if
back.
If we could move the boundary, I just can't.
Yeah. And we've actually helped them write some grants this year for equipment for their school, and they want to get more involved, so they're going to be part of the run. Fundamentally, what the students are going to do is run from one school to the next. The principal will sign a document. You know, supporting the anti.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and
you made it this far.
Well, no, that they will. You know, that school will pledge to cut out bullying. You know, have campaigns to do that. Then they'll go to the next school, the principal, and they end up here. Hopefully, the commissioners, the two of you, and Simon, if he's available, will sign that. Maybe the mayor as well. We really want community support. This is going to be a year-long program. We're going to have outside speakers come in and talk at each of the schools about the issue of bullying. Kids can all sign a proclamation or something at their school that they are opposed to bullying and will intercede where they need to. Obviously, if it's a situation that's dangerous, they will then obviously...
So your focus will be on bullying this year?
Yes.
And then next year, do you focus on something else? Do you pick
well, it really, you know, we leave it to the students to come back with what are the things that they see. Some of them, like Campus Closets, continue every year. The Vision Clinic is every year. We've been doing a program lately called Every 15 Minutes, which is an anti-driving impairment type of program, where they stage an accident. Students are killed. The driver is arrested. But the fire department is there, the Grants Pass City Police have been there.
Illinois Valley Fire?
What? Mm-hmm. Illinois Valley with the year we did it down there. We did it last year at Hidden Valley. This year I think there's 2 other schools doing it. But it's really done generally in the spring before prom and just show what happens and try to drive that home. One project that's just being completed this week. And actually, one major step's taking place this afternoon, and there will be a public ribbon cutting next week, and that is a project called Float, which is life jacket stations at county parks. And it's been a long time in coming. We've had some litigation-type issues of, you know, can the students be held liable if something happens, you know, et cetera. So,
no, but they're parents. No, I'm just kidding.
So, basically, the... Middle Rogue Steelheaders, another nonprofit, will actually have signed the contract with the county, and they will have it in their name. We are, through the funds we raise, we are building the stations, installing them, buying all of the life jackets, etc. But the Steelheaders will be the ones actually responsible for the maintaining of them and all of that.
Are the students still, I mean, have you guys been in touch with Grants Pass Police on this one as far as some of the things they've been dealing with, the stations they've had, and kind of some of the lessons learned and some of the issues they've come up with?
It's the Steelheaders' responsibility to take care of all actions.
Okay.
We just supply and help.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
One of the supply is one of the issues that they've been dealing with, but it is one of those things that it might be worth reaching out just to kind of hear so you guys aren't reinventing the wheel with some of the things they've been mitigating.
Okay.
Another resource would be Don Carter at the Active Company. He got a whole bunch of jackets donated from somebody. All they had to do was be Coast Guard certified again, and he got that all done.
Yeah, he's close ties with us. So.
Yeah, okay, good.
His daughter is the one that was doing the project.
Yeah,
yeah, no, I'm good with that. Yeah. So anyway, that's just kind of, I've talked more than I need to talk, but that's just a quick overview of what we're doing with JCF. I'll turn it over to Chris. He's the one running it day to day, so what's trying to teach?
So just to give you guys a basic idea, FBLA has been the cream of the crop at Hidden Valley for many years, and the idea and structure was great, to have a great business program out there. But the idea was that I needed the kids to be more involved, more educated and hands-on. And so that's why we created this nonprofit foundation for the students to get engaged and active in. And so now the switch has been taking place to be the bigger, hopefully, entity in our school. And so the goal here is to have these students ready to go for the next level, whatever they choose, whether it's go to college or whether it's going to the industry. And so, again, get them excited. Career ready, and so we focus on project management, and so again get these students involved in running the whole gamut from beginning to end. And you have some hiccups along the way, and you got to deal that with students because you got to let them learn. But that's the whole focus: is if students can do more, get more engaged and more involved, A, they're excited about school, but again they're going to be ready for the next level. And so as we decided to do this, and you could hear all the projects, it is about the students serving our community, because they are a part of our community. They can help solve our problems in our community along with the adults. And so as we go forward and we do these projects and we come up with these ideas, we need to hear new ideas and new projects, but we want to continue to serve our community through this foundation. And it's not just Hidden Valley. Again, there's 5 and hopefully not a 6th school involved. It's really about all the kids being engaged and active. And as you see in the pamphlet and brochure in front of you, a listing of projects, listing of information, and we've done a very successful job. And sometimes we do it in the night and under the secrets of the moon, because again, we just kind of do things and things happen and people go, oh, someone did that. We're starting to try to change our publicity and wanted to make sure that we're known in our community as we start to seek more projects, more funding as we grow. Because, again, it is beneficial to the students in every capacity. And, again, you have a student right here that's only to be a junior, but, again, her resume is stellar. And she has 2 more years to go. And it's just great growth. And so we're excited about that. And that's what we're going for.
Talk about the 24-hour fundraiser coming up.
Oh, we got so many different projects and so many different things. And one of the things that you'll receive from me is a request for you guys to come visit us. We're going to locate 24 hours at the People's Bank next Friday and Saturday. And we're going to
stay. Fair week.
Again, it's just a matter of schedule. It's very difficult. We have a lot of events. But we're going to stay up for 24 straight hours and raise money for our operations, but for to go right back into the community with projects and helping us do better. And the reason why we'd love to have you guys stop by is because, again, when we get a call into the radio station or have them there for a visit, we'd love to have our county commissioner say, hey, we support this group and we support you guys to come on down.
Is that 18th, 19th?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
I'm out of town.
And you might be out of town, but we're going to ask.
I'm in town, but it's my 50th graduation reunion.
Yes.
From Grants Pass High School.
But what we could do is...
Yeah, you'll be right here.
I read the article about you and your driving, too.
Yeah, my driving skills.
They've improved.
That's a good one. I keep that picture on my desk, and I show that to every young person. And they go, what's your message? And I said, well, don't dink and dive. Drive is the obvious one, but don't ever make your mother cry.
Yeah. But it's not the same vehicle, but that new one looks just fixed
it's
up.
It's almost done. I licensed it yesterday.
Oh, did you?
You got it done.
That's close. Mm-hmm.
So that project is just another example of kids now, you know, just not always asking, but they're learning to write grants, do fundraising, and being active to support their foundation.
Great.
So in every aspect.
I'll be in town on Saturday. Saturday, you're going to be there during the day?
Well, we could take a pre-written statement and read it for you.
That's fine. I'd rather be there.
Oh, really? You'd be there. Thank you. Saturday, yes.
I'll swing by Saturday morning.
Yeah, I think it's from 3 p.m. on
Friday. Yes, 3 to 3.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, I'll squeeze it in. No problem.
Thank you. But I'll send you guys an email.
One of the things that... the students do a lot of grant writing for small grants to fund their projects like the vision clinic. Joan and I have spent time writing some larger grants to help our operations, but one that we just recently got was a little over $50,000 from the Meyer Memorial Trust. And it really is to deal with the fact of the low graduation rates. And so we're working with the school districts right now. They're actually out hiring two graduation coaches, one at North Valley and one at Hidden Valley, that will work on customized plans for those kids that are really on the cusp. They either have problems outside of school that are impacting them, or they need some extra tutoring, whatever. It'll be individual programs just to get those kids over the finish line and not have them drop out toward the end. So we're looking at teaching some other very basic financial skills, computer skills, even if the kids, unfortunately, some will drop out, but if they all as freshmen take these mandatory elementary courses in, you know, what's loans and interest and mortgages and all of these things that they come across in life, if we give them some education on that up front, as well as, you know, Word and Excel and the computer skills, you know, they're going to leave, whether they graduate or not, with a lot more knowledge and hopefully greater probability of success in the community. So Joan's been kind of overseeing that. And one other one, do you want to talk about?
Well, maybe you'd like to hear a little bit from Aria first, okay. one of the students that's involved.
Yeah, well, I've been pretty quiet so far. What GCF means to me, I don't know. It's just kind of something that's defined my high school career so far. It's not just another club that I do or something that you get involved with, but it's really taught me so many things that I can hardly put it into words. It's taught me how to run a business. It's taught me how to work with others and just really increasing communication skills and all of that stuff. But it's also influenced what I want to do for my future career. So I was really driven even from a very young age, but ever since I was probably 8 years old, I wanted to be a lawyer. And I never really knew like what kind of lawyer I wanted to be, but working with GCF and working with nonprofits, I found that I really have a passion for nonprofits and working with businesses and things like that. So I want to study business law and hopefully go to Stanford for that in my future. So it's really inspired me to do a lot of different things in my life, and I'm extremely grateful for GCF and everyone in it.
Cool.
It's amazing what affects you right now, because I learned to get along with people because I worked for Chevron Station at the corner of E and Mill Street.
Mm-hmm.
And just the interaction between young people and adults. You know, you have young people sometimes, I don't want to talk to them because they're an adult. And vice versa, I don't want to talk to you because you're younger. But just that interaction was amazing transformation. And then, you know, so you're not afraid to talk to anybody.
That could be said true.
I often wonder if her and I get paid by the word, and we don't.
We just offer more for free.
We just, yeah. You're getting your money's worth. That's right. Really nice for work wise.
I do have a couple questions though. With you mentioned the kiln and getting a grant for that, but RCC is moving their Small Business Development Center and the art gallery out of the Firehouse Gallery, and they're vacating that. And so it makes me wonder if they're reducing any equipment that maybe could go towards some of the local schools. And that's happening this summer sometime, I've heard. So it might be worth seeing if there's any opportunity for repurposing to the high schools. Mm-hmm. Another thing is we recognize in our Rotary group, you know, students of the year from all the schools.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And one of our students of the year wrote back that it was especially meaningful for them to be acknowledged because they're homeless. And they're still homeless, even going through that thing. And some of the things that have had an impact on some of the kids as far as a parole officer, I had a single dad in my office who was trying to get his kid motivated to go to school. And at 9 years old, she didn't want to go because she didn't have any clean clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know how to read or write himself. So trying to motivate his child to go to school, but hygiene was an issue. And some of the things they've talked about is if we can get washers and dryers in some of the schools, that it would maybe perchance. It's one thing to learn about taxes and this other stuff. Some of them don't know basic hygiene about how to do a load of laundry, how to wash dishes, how to do a normal function. And we're also finding that our community has traditionally been a hands-on, blue-collar worker kind of thing. And where you guys excel with the FBLA and the business training, there's seeming to be a wider gap of the trades. and folks that might have that encouragement to get the welding or the woodworking or the other programs. And I know North Valley's really doing well with their woodworking right now. Grants Pass has brought back their welding. But something for the folks that by ninth grade are so bored, how do you keep them engaged? Because they maybe are learning something hands-on. And so we've been talking about trying to do internships or practicums for trade skills so that it's keeping them engaged towards business. That's an alternative business route than a traditional, you know, Dan was a business owner who is a metal fabricator who can figure out anything like that. But that's not something you learn going to Stanford. And where we need that, we also need the other. And seeing a way of trying to bridge that gap with those kids that don't see themselves college-bound, how do we get them through school? And as you're focusing on graduation rates, that's something that we as a community have been talking about. How do we affect those kids as well? And so washers and dryers or showers, several, we have high levels of homeless kids in our community that are couch hopping. So how do you actually get them to complete school if they don't know where they're sleeping tonight or necessarily have that meal prepared? So they're at least getting the free meals in the school district, but getting their clothes clean necessarily. And if they smell, do they want to be there? And so just something else that if they're too ashamed to be in school, they're not going to keep going. So that's an area that we've talked about. And one of the things I'm just curious with the focus on bullying this year, I went through some troubled times in junior high, and I found myself being a bully. But the reality was is everything in my home life was so chaotic that it was my only way of kind of having an outcome. And it took some older kids to kind of put me in my spot and remind me, that's not what you want to do. But nobody ever got to the point of, why are you doing that? And I'm worried that our schools are just focusing on anti-bully in the sense of, let's kick you out. You bullied, you're out. You're expelled, you're suspended, or whatever. But really, when are we looking at what's the cause behind the behavior? And how do we mediate and bring to showing some alternative coping skills, some alternative outcomes? It's not always just because you're picking on somebody else. What's really, and I don't know. I think it's a great focus.
You brought up two amazing points, things that I've been saying for 20 plus years as I work in my field at the school. And I'm a vocational teacher and saying that the vocational area has been cut first. The focus, though, has been in with the state and with the is that it's college. It's college. Mm-hmm. It's college. Doesn't matter who you are. It's college. And it's everyone should go to college. And that's a state issue. And so, again, when we start to talk about vocation, you're an area that we live mm-hmm. and trying to push it. And it's a state funded and mandated that every kid will go for 4 years of English, every kid will go to this, but doesn't look at the kids that you just described. And that's what we're trying with you know, with your guys' vision too there, trying to make that change of difference and try to offer those things. And it's tough because again, you're going against a state mandate that says every kid should go to college. Every kid can get
It's really
college.
Been more than just our state. There's yeah. been a push nationally.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you'll hear, is it Mike Rowe that's got his $1 million scholarship to anyone going to trade school and he can't fill it because he can't get the people to go? That everything started going towards, if you mm-hmm. don't go to college, you nothing. Well, then we've already left behind this. As I was talking to an electrician locally, and I said, who do you have doing internships with you? Who are your apprentices? We're not doing that. It's not, you know, and it's one of those things that we're going to have a whole generation of people who don't know how to do any skills.
Yep.
I installed a faucet yesterday at my grandmother's house, and it was very exciting getting the plumbing putty out and getting everything going. But for me, I'm trying to figure out how do you keep kids in school and engaged, and I think that's going to have a bigger impact. We had our economic development committee last night, and we're talking about how do we change the culture of our community, that we have workforce ready. Well, that means that the entire workforce has to be, we can't all be lawyers, we can't all be teachers, we can't all be politicians. We have to have everybody fill in the whole need for the whole system to work appropriately. And I just worry that we're leaving some behind.
Well, one of the programs that, the bullying program that Frank talked about is a big one. We have got several other things that we do throughout the year. And one of them is we're going to be working with Hidden Valley High School developing a pilot program that will focus on the kids that aren't on track to graduate. And one of the elements of that is to start early, like as freshmen, and be bringing in adults that work in different careers, technical careers, all kinds of careers, and to have the adults talk about what is involved in the career, the education that's required to be in that field, as well as what the money that you can make in that field. And so, because kids don't know what they don't know. If you're not exposed to these different things and you don't, then you just don't know what the opportunities are. So we did hear when we were talking with the students the other day, because we always are interested in listening to what they have to say. And several of them are saying, well, currently in school, their career training or options discussion starts happening in their junior and senior year. Well, that's too late. So they're saying, why can't we do some of this in the earlier years? And so that's going to be a key element of, with we talked about this, well, we got a major grant from the Meyer Memorial Trust, which Frank alluded to. And they have basically given us a green light to collaborate with the school to pilot and come up with a program, because they know this is a problem, and to think that if we can come up with some innovative ways to do this. So we listened to the kids, we talked to experts in the field, and we're in fact going to be meeting with Dave Stone later today to talk about some of the different elements of this program that we want to work on. But it's very much going to be exposure to the trades.
Well, I'll give you some of my history. I went to Roosevelt for first three grades, then Highland to sixth grade. And in sixth grade, I was in an accelerated class. We were an experiment that went all wrong. It was, how much can you jam into a sixth grader's head in 1 year? Me, Libby Spaulding from Spaulding Industrial, Steve Hicks, and I could name our classmates.
Like these are to like academic or
academic.
These skills? Academic.
How much can you jam in a kid's head? I wrote a term paper every 9 weeks. I diagrammed sentences until the wee hours of the morning. Everything. It was, how much can you get into that kid's head? We did 4 math books, 3 science books, 4 English books, 4 history books in 1 year. And guess what? I was not challenged again until Math 5, my junior year. And I would say, when I went to all through South Middle School, I just sat there. I was unchallenged until I got there. And so by the time I got out of high school, I barely got out of high school up here, Grants Pass High School. I had a D minus, 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 minus in English. You know why? Because I refused to write another term paper. I was done. And then the only reason I got past my senior year in English is because I read 1984. And the teacher said, you don't even know what it's about. I said, I don't. You want it in one sentence? Take away your past, you have no future. I said, now you can't flunk me. She goes, you did read that book. I said, yeah, and I absorbed it. I'll read Animal Farm later. But that's what happened. So I was no more interested in school than the man in the moon. But I did work in that gas station. I worked on cars. I had my mechanical skills. Our weekend was not sports. It was Ron Martin, who had the photo den. His wife is the
chamber president.
Director of the Chamber of Commerce. Ron Martin and I, at 17, 16 and 17 years old, we had a 58 Corvette, and we were going drag racing on the weekend at various tracks around the Pacific Northwest. Parents let me do that. Can't do that today. But when I got in the United States Navy, I went in the United States Navy, and the first time I spent about 6 months in an engine room, and then I got tangled up in AC&R, air conditioning refrigeration. The second I walked into that shop, I said, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. No questions asked. You know, something will hit you like a board, and it sounds like it might have already. You may be an attorney yet, whether you like it in spite of yourself. But that was where I got it. But as a businessman, there were things that I lost. I've lost so much money. I've made good money. I've never been a rich man. I don't intend to ever be a rich man. How I ever got qualified to do this job, I don't have the faintest idea. But, however, it was one of those things that I felt I needed to do to give back to my community by going to city council for 7 years and then over to this position here. But college was never in my gun sights. My dad, when I got out of high school, he says, hey, I was washing that car that was on the front page of the paper. And he came out and he says, so what college are you going to go to, son? And I said, I'm not. I said, don't waste your money and my time. I'm done with school. He said, well, sorry to hear that, because he was a carpenter, worked with his hands. is I want better for you, as all parents want better for their kid. And I said, I'll just find my own way. And I did, and I got an air conditioner. I ended up in the construction trade, of course, just like my dad. I lost a lot of money because I didn't have the proper schooling to run a business that you're getting exposed to that. And I did. I lost a ton of money. I even was a loan officer in the Navy for a little while, right, Ricky? And so, you know, follow your dreams. But, boy, it's going to hit you. If you're in the wrong thing for the rest of your life, my gosh, I can't even imagine doing something that I couldn't stand. But the vocational side of it, we used to get, in March, we would get young people come into my shop and say, from college, and say, I need a job for the summer to pay my tuition. Help with my tuition. I got to help my parents with college. Can I do anything? I'd have parents come in and say, can you give Steve a job for the summer? He's, you know, doing anything. Didn't get that. I haven't had that in 10 to 12 years, maybe even 15. People go, why? Why aren't kids coming in? I said, it's called student loans. Why should I work when I can borrow every dime of it? Pay it back later when I'm a millionaire.
Well, and working doesn't actually provide enough to cover for the next year anymore.
I mean, it just doesn't do it. So if that money's available from a different channel, guess what? I'm not going to work this summer. I've got a student loan covering the whole thing. And that's sad because that's one of the things that's hurting today. But one of the things is that the vocational side of it, a lot of people think that electricians, you know, I'm not going to do that because I can't make enough money.
Oh, they are very wrong.
Sorry.
Very wrong.
I'm the guy writing the invoice when your air conditioner breaks down. Okay. Because you know what? I spent 4 years bobbing around on a destroyer learning my trade. It was no different than sitting in a school, except I got to see the world at the same time. But
in corrections, they have a cap of whether or not somebody finished 10th grade is to being an indicator for future criminality. I mean, we hear them talk about how many people read in third grade is a direct link to how many jail beds you'll need in the future. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are we focusing on literacy for our kids, getting them to be able to read? But getting past the 10th grade is a next huge mile marker. Mm-hmm. And yet, the correction industry knows it because of an indicator they found of people that end up in their system. But how come the schools maybe don't realize that waiting till junior year to talk about vocational training mm-hmm. when getting them past 10th grade is critical, and they're already gone by 9th or 10th grade
yep.
because of the fact that something didn't capture them sooner. And I like the fact that, I mean, obviously you've seen the experience, you've dealt with that, and we have to have people of all calibers, but we do, I think, in this community have to keep working together, that it's all of us involved to start focusing on that. And
Well, that's going to be part of this program that I described to you. We're going to be looking to people in the community to come in and talk to the kids mm-hmm. and talk about professions and maybe internship programs. And because mm-hmm. each kid, if you can find what their passion is and open some doors, it's just going to really change their life. And that's really so much what our motivation is that kids don't know what they don't know. But you've got to try to ignite that passion and learning, because they can do it. They can learn if they want to. And
this problem with the lack of vocational exposure for the kids is not unique to this area. I was senior officer for an international utility company who started out in San Diego Gas and Electric. We can't get linemen. You know, the IBEW has an apprentice program to try to teach people, but there's just not enough people coming into those technical areas. But back to a point you made, Lily, on washers and dryers.
Yes, sir.
We have supplied two so far. We just did a grant on behalf of Rogue River, and they got funding from a local nonprofit, so they got a washer and dryer. They had done a survey of students. 40% of the students did not have access to a washer and dryer at home.
Oh, my God.
And when we have been working with Sunny Wolf Charter School up in Wolf Creek, and we've done a lot of things to help them, you know, rebuild the roofs and the bathrooms in their gymnasium building, but they had no washer and dryer in the community. And they said kids were coming in with dirty clothes, babies, you know, the parents would rinse out the diaper, throw it back on. So the kids themselves raised the money for the washer and dryer at the school there that's open to the community to utilize. So, you know, you're right on point that there are some very basic things that are missing in some of our communities that we can help with.
I think that one of the things we haven't really targeted yet is with the cannabis industry, providing cash under the table, quick money. We're seeing kids dropping out of school to go get quick cash and stuff like that. Or that it's been the family business, so I don't need an education because dad did just fine. I don't need that. But at some level, there is something to say, what if we were teaching horticultural classes? What if we're teaching industrial classes about irrigation of various things or what pipelines are there? I mean, something to say, you want to go in that line of work? Let's teach you how to be a better business person in it. Or what skills would you need to do that? You know what? You're going to need to know what your costs are versus what your expenses are to see if it, you know, pencils out and all this kind of stuff. Let's teach you how this can work in a farming area or what you're, you know. It's not that you want to promote necessarily an industry, but you do want to say, if we're already going to lose them, how do we say do it better? How do we, and the idea is that we're building up our entire economy in the entire community and providing jobs regardless of what your job is. I mean, the opportunities with hemp to create a whole industrial section, but right now the competition between hemp and cannabis is huge in our community. But, I mean, they can bring in manufacturing jobs left and right over the hemp industry. So are we looking at maybe those are opportunities for training different job things that aren't necessarily going to get us in trouble with federal law? Just kind of trying to think of, I have loggers that tell me they can't get enough workers because they have to pass a test because of safety, and they can't compete for the cost of the under table wages, and they can't compete with the drug testing. And so we have guys that have trucks ready to go to get people logging, and they can't get the workers. And I'm hearing that in several different industries, so not just linemen. Yeah. It's around here as well. And
I have a friend that owns a large trucking company. He got three trucks sat in idle because he can't find drivers and pass the urinalysis.
Yeah. My fiance's a lineman, and his boss was telling us at dinner one time, he's all, this year has been the hardest year to find workers because no one can pass the drug tests. Yeah. So officially, no one can pass drug tests.
We did a...
I can.
I can too.
I think everybody in this room can.
I had a... I took a field trip to a dispensary at the AOC, Association of Oregon Counties, conference last year, and it was amazing because I'd never been in one. You know, so I'm asking the guy that owns the place, I said, you know, let me ask you a question. I said, where's your responsibility to society? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, well, you just had a guy walk in here, he had a vest on with the reflector stuff. He's a construction worker, and he bought marijuana, and he's going to go home and smoke a bowl while he's watching the Raiders play football or something. That's going to stay with him for 30 days in his system. He will test positive for cannabis for 30 days. So I have a sheet metal shop, and so I get a guy, and he chops his finger off in the stump shear. And I take finger and employee out to the hospital. They say, how'd you do this? Well, I was working, I stomped my finger off in the stump shear. Oh, draw blood. We have to test him first, see if he's impaired. Well, he's working impaired because he has cannabis in his system. Immediately, SAFE, or whoever I have my workman's compensation from, goes, excuse me, sir, can we talk to you a moment? So I go in the back in the room, and they say, he's impaired. Why did you let him work impaired? I said, I had no idea he was impaired. Well, we do, and therefore we're not going to cover that injury right there. So now it all falls on me as the employer, number one. Number two is you lose a trigger finger, that's 40% disability for the rest of your life. We're not going to pay that either. You are. I said, so right now, you settle that guy, that construction worker, that bag of whatever, you put me or whoever his employer is at risk of losing everything they've ever hoped to earn. I'm not in the drug industry, never have, don't partake of drugs. I've kept my nose clean so I can provide for my family and my workers' family, and my employees' family. Mm-hmm. And you just put it all at risk, and with absolutely no concept that you're probably ruining a whole bunch of people's lives by just letting it go out the door. You have no responsibility. A bartender has responsibility, and you don't. I don't get that. And he says, you know, nobody's ever asked me that. I said, well, I'm from the business community, and that's why I am asking.
Good,
so it's something we're all dealing with, but it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. The labor market is right now is just over the top drained.
They said you're going to do the 100-mile run. So
you're going to help me with the 100-mile run.
Yeah, we've got you for the 100-mile run. Her and I are handing out water bottles, and then you're going to do them. We're going to be there cheering out. What we'll do is we'll text you every once in a while and see how you're coming.
Sounds really good, actually. It sounds like a lot of fun. It's probably a life goal to be able to run 100 miles over the rest of my life.
Yeah. You're expecting to get it done in less than one day.
Oh, wow. Sounds ambitious. Like an Iron Man. Wanted to come in and apologize for not being here. I've been double booked, and then I'm jumping over to another meeting. But it was good to have you guys here. And I'm sure you're in good hands with these two. They're great commissioners. So,
good. Thank
nice
you, Simon.
Thank you.
Call you about that run.
But it's I think our labor pool is probably the biggest issue that I think you'll find anywhere. I heard from a construction friend of mine that up there on Hampton Inn, they were paying like $28 an hour and couldn't get anybody to work. Then they bumped it to $35 an hour and they still couldn't get anybody. Now they're bringing people over from Medford at $50 an hour construction, pounding down $50 an hour. And it's all because of the drug testing. It can't get anybody to work. It's sad. It's really sad.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Well, and that's where the county's prevention program can come into play. And we're trying to do younger junior high, high school education as far as if we can keep them from starting use, then the likelihood of not continuing to use, whether it's starting tobacco or some other product. More often than not, though, when we're interviewing folks about how old were you when you started using meth, 12 was a very common age. And so it literally is younger and younger. So if we can get to them sooner and keep them from starting, as you guys are developing the internships or the practicums or the job skills training in the workforce, we're going to show them an incentive to keep going and to keep staying clean so that we have this workforce that can pass tests.
Give them a reason to live, you know.
But I think, you know, the point you just made is extremely important for us to find a way to get the message out. The fact that, you know, we're bringing people in from out of this area for jobs paying $40, $50 mm-hmm. an hour because people here are utilizing cannabis and it stays in your system. You can't pass the test. You can't get a job. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if people, well, I just smoked last night. I'm fine today. They don't understand.
They may not know.
Yeah, that it's in their system, and if they can't pass that test, they don't have a job in many industries.
Mr. Duncan, that has Rogue Valley Fashion Doors down here on the behind Walmart and Fred Meyer, he interviewed 200 people for job placement. 200, 160 of the 200 failed the drug test. He hired the additional 40. There was 40 lefties. I'll hire every one of you. By Friday, he had 9 left. That is an absolute, that's just something that institutionally, or I don't know, I don't even know the word for it.
So what
it's
do you,
wrong.
What can be done about that?
You know, I'm not sure.
It goes to the culture of saying that if it's legal, it's not harmful. It's a lot of why you see that our youth are starting to take prescription pills because if a doctor gave it to my parents, it's okay for me to take it. So when you see the pill parties and all, it's not going to hurt me. A doctor gave it to me. And so with the culture of legalizing, it's not harmful. It's just a business, this and that. There's no harm in using. And so reality is your decision-making is not complete until your 20s. You know, so if we can get you through that stage, but if everybody thinks it's okay, fine, whatever you do as an adult, you make your decision. But in this stage, let's get you past that level before you can't make that decision for yourself anymore.
Well, one of the other projects that we're doing is we received a grant from OHSU, Oregon Health and Science University, that's going to be to gather information from high school kids about their use of tobacco.
You should really contact the county's prevention because they're also doing those surveys.
Yes. I'm trying to get in touch with the two of the ladies that I know out there to see what they're doing.
Okay.
But because OHSU is very focused on cancer, and so that's so. But we're going to talk to them about Ari and I were just talking about this the other day, including a lot of questions about marijuana use, and just when did they start, how they get it, why they're doing it, and so forth. And the idea is to do this survey in each of the Three Rivers High School, and then we're going to analyze the data, and see what we learn about what the kids are doing. And then OHSU has follow-on funding that you can apply for to develop an intervention. So if we find out the big issue is girls in that are sophomores vaping, you know, it's a big deal, but that's what the need is. Then we want to design, working with experts, design a program focused on getting those girls to not ever get started. So that's something that Aria had an idea that we would actually create this, do our survey, and then test it on some students to see what they thought about the questions that were being asked before we actually went out and did the survey. So actually collecting information, because Josephine County did not participate in the Healthy Teens survey last time. So there's not current information. And a lot of the questions in that survey aren't so much cutting-edge questions that we want to get at. Because kids, everybody knows that smoking is bad for you. I think 86% of people know smoking is bad for you. But they don't know, kind of what Lily is alluding to, that some of these other things that you start to do, they don't know that those are bad for you. And an industry will tell you, or the tobacco companies or the companies selling these products will say, they're not bad for you. And just like tobacco companies several decades ago would say smoking was okay. You know, so
my big one for modern day is energy drinks. I go down to the stop at A Street Market and I'm watching kids go in and buy four or five Red Bulls to go to school with. And the 5 hour energy, an energy drink. Well, I'm a type 2 diabetic, and I bet you $100 a good portion of that started through those energy drinks. I don't take them, I never have. Mine was custard-filled chocolate bars on the way to work. But I had a
contact information for
a gentleman that worked for me, and he came in every day with three cans of Red Bull. He drank two before he started work, and then one at lunchtime. I said, that's going to backfire on you someday. His pancreas shut down. He doesn't make any insulin anymore. He's full-blown diabetic now. His wife called me and said, Bill's in the hospital, he won't be in tomorrow. And I said, what's up? Is something going on with it? Yeah, he passed out, and I had him go to the hospital. His blood sugar is over 600. He is full-blown diabetic. And now he's needles, he's into insulin dependent. And I told him, I said, that's not what your system needs. So I don't know if you know, adding 75 cents a can on the energy drinks and putting that towards education.
It won't change it. You can get them with food stamps.
Yep.
Yeah, that's true.
So interestingly, this is the person that I'm trying to get in touch with, Shawn Martinez. So she is aware of me, and we're just trying to find
I'll follow
time
up with her as well.
Talk. Okay, well, thank you.
So she's getting ready to leave on a conference, so that'll follow up with
her. Okay, thank you. So I was just before we had our meeting today, I was on the phone with Aaron Patnode, the executive director in Oregon for Blue Zone. Mm-hmm. And your name came up in that conversation as far as someone that had participated so far in the interview and the process that's going to help them collect information within the community, and then they work with the community to decide what the focus areas are. Because each Blue Zone can be different. It's the community that decides what they're going to focus on. And so to the extent that the labor issue is something that community members talk about, that could be something that would be a focal point of this work that's will take place over the next 3 years. But we're looking for ways to get the JCF students involved in the process. So, but I guess in closing, I wanted to ask you, are there any thoughts that you have, having heard about all the different projects that we work on and some of the things that you've shared, next steps about how we could work together, or things that we could JCF could do that you think are priorities, or things that you think that you could help us with from your vantage point?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is City of Cape Junction has a student liaison to their council. And I know we never did that at City Council here, and we haven't done it as Kitcheners, but it is one of those things that oftentimes with county government, I mean, I came in the last week of June, but it's literally the last week of school. as far as talking about what happens there, but how often people in the community get confused what government does and who's responsible for what. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there would be an opportunity of inviting students to take part in meetings, or us, you know, what if we held a meeting out at Hidden Valley High School or North Valley High School or Illinois Valley High School at different times throughout the year, so mm-hmm. that we're engaging the students from a local government.
You could do a town hall, too, out there, and just mm-hmm. kind of field questions about government mm-hmm. in general.
That'd be a good idea. Mm-hmm. Like town halls.
Yeah, we've done two what we call convenings, one here about 4 years ago, where we had the students, business leaders, et cetera, all come together. We had about 75 people here. But then 2 years ago, we did one down in the Illinois Valley as well. And one of the things that was very apparent down there was a lot of the people are involved in agriculture and mm-hmm. talking about how the schools lack, you know, much in the way of ag programs. And at least one of them offered up his farm as a place that kids could come out to and, you know, learn things and do things. So, you know, there's a lot of interest in the community in certain areas about helping the students, and sometimes we just don't take advantage of those offers.
There's a gentleman that I went to a deal out in the valley. In fact, he says, I'm a dirt farmer. And I, you know, I've heard that term before, you know, and I thought, well, that's kind of derogatory. And then he explained it to me. He says, I farm the dirt. He says, I don't care what grows out of it. He says, if I don't take care of that dirt, whatever comes out of that dirt is not going to be healthy anyway. He says, I don't care what crop I put into it. I better farm my dirt first, because it's the beginning of all plant life is that soil. So mm-hmm. he is a dirt farmer. He's an expert in dirt, not plants, dirt. I thought, you know, I've never looked at it that way, but I look at it altogether different now, because he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. If you don't have the proper soils, then you would learn that.
That's where I see a difference between the word dirt and soil. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they are really, in reality, synonymous. But, mm-hmm. And this is what people learned early on when they didn't rotate crops. They just did the same crop, cotton or whatever it was, year after year, and all of a sudden it started to fail. Yeah. Because you took all the energy and the nutrients out of the soil. You didn't let it go quiet for a year, or rotate crops and get different minerals and things in there.
It was an interesting concept, though.
Yep.
Well, I have enjoyed seeing what the foundation has been doing the last few years, and anything that we can do to encourage and support you guys. We'd like to offer Simon anytime you need a 100-mile run.
And,
anyhow, I appreciate you guys taking the time.
But as you go through and you have exposure to so many things in your position, if you see there's a need somewhere and you think this is something that students from whichever school could really step in and do something and make a difference, and let us know. We have advisors at all the schools, contacts there, and would be very happy to find things that the students can get engaged with that help their community.
Good place to start.
Yep, definitely.
Perfect.
All right, any other closing thoughts or comments?
Well, thank you for your time
and
energy.
Thank you for your time.
I would like to speak to one of you two about about graduation rates, because that is I'm part of SoReady, and one of the things that I brought up is a graduation rate that is low here. If I was going to bring my business here and bring my management team and their kids here, and I say, gee, I just went by that high school up there. My gosh, that was part of the tour. What a beautiful facility. What's your graduation rate? 68%. I'm going to go, oops, what happened there? So that's one of the hurdles that we have as a community that we're going to have to fix, and we're going to have to fix it pretty darn fast. Another one is, where do I buy a sport jacket? Fred Meyer or Walmart? I got to go to Metro to get a sport jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go if I'm having a heart attack? Do I go to this beautiful hospital out here on the highway? No, you tell the ambulance driver to take you to Medford. So we have a lot of little bitty things here.
Yeah.
How's your law enforcement?
Superb.
We can't get a lobby.
Superb.
We can't get a levy.
Now we have.
We worked hard in this building to get that done.
So. All right, so it is 1:59 and we are adjourned.